Blog Talk Radio.
Life, growth, and wellness.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome. It's Truthful Tuesday, and you know, this is my favorite day of the week because I love being on the radio with you and sharing the guests that we have, the incredible people that come to share who they are with you every week. So sit back and relax and just enjoy what we're about to do tonight on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And, you know, each week we make sure that we're all centered in the same energy. So we begin each week by reading an affirmative message. And, you know, they come from what I produce. It's called RevSandy.wordpress.com. And so today's message is evolving. Evolving is an act of movement. It is neither stagnant nor dormant. Evolving is growing and expanding. Evolving is action. Each day I am evolving. I choose to evolve into an enlightened individual filled with unconditional love, peace, harmony, and acceptance. As I evolve, I entertain higher insight. I continually strive to stretch wider and wider to grow more and more. I take this evolution seriously. I seek knowledge and wisdom from the source, all that is good and honorable. I evolve with great expectations. I thrive for excellence in my endeavors and growth. I give my best efforts in evolving into a better human. I stay focused on positive outcomes and hold only positive expectations. I am growing. I am allowing my light to shine for myself and others. I light the way with truth, humility, and justice. I am a beacon of unconditional love and appreciation. I evolve with the knowingness that God is in control. I summon the energies of my ancestors, spiritual guides, and masters. As I evolve, certain habits, traits, and ways are transformed and now greatly benefit me in a new way. As with the butterfly, as my metamorphosis is completed, the result is a uniquely new, beautiful creature. A new look and a new purpose are now mine. And again, that's from my daily inspirational message at RevSandy.wordpress.com. And, you know, the next thing that we do in preparing for our Tuesday night radio program is to, oh, man, this is such a special, special moment for me, is to evoke and invite the energies of our ancestors. So we ask them all to be present with us and surround us and guide us as we discuss topics that are not normally talked about out in the open, but only whispered in the corner. So, ancestors, we love you, we appreciate you, and we know that you hold us up, and we stand on your shoulders as we go about our day-to-day living and existence. So we pay much homage. We salute you with much gratitude, much love, and much respect. So, ancestors, we love you, we love you, we love you. Ashe, ashe. So it's all about life. It's all about love. It's all about wellness. So tonight's show is called Public Health and Poetry, and we have with us the incomparable Dr. Imani Myatt, who is going to be sharing with us from her storehouse of wisdom and knowledge. And she's going to make these two come together for you so that you understand what she means by public health and poetry. And then for you guys that are listening also, I want to give a special shout out to my dad. He's going to be 97 next month. And so I'm in Los Angeles with him. I'm not sure he's going to last the whole show, but he is at least with us right now. So we give a shout out to Mr. James Onsted. Yay! So we're all good. We're all good. And we're looking forward to sharing with Dr. Imani in just a moment. But, you know, we're going to take us a quick break. Audience, you know that you can call in, speak live on air with us. Our call-in number here is 516-531-9819. And you would simply press 1 on your dial to let us know that you want to speak live on air with us. So we're going to take just a quick break, and then we'll be right back with you. This is Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show.
Car at all, brothers and sisters.
That was William Devine with Be Thankful for What You Got. And again, I want you guys to know that my co-host tonight is none other than my dad, Mr. James Armstead, who's going to be a very young 97 in just a few weeks. So he is going to be with us for as long as he chooses. So we're going to make sure that we honor him and his presence tonight. So welcome back to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. We have Dr. Amani Maat with us tonight. She's going to be talking to us about public health and poetry and where that intersection is and what it means about wellness and positive choices for healthy lives. And so she's going to explain to us some options and some programs that she's been working with, and she has a options for living and learning program that she teaches at the jail system in Atlanta. I got to remember. I'm in L.A. right now. So she's going to be sharing that with us and some of the other things that she does. She works with the youth. She works with the adults. She's a writer. She is a holistic practitioner in every sense of the word. And so we're going to bring Dr. Amani on right now and have her, have you ever known somebody and you want to try to remember, like, where you first met them and you can't remember, but then it's like you've always known them? So that's the way it is with me and Dr. Amani. I don't know when that first encounter happened, but we seem to just be those type of friends where, we just have bonded with one another. So I'm going to bring Dr. Amani on and let her introduce herself to you in the manner that she wishes to do that. Dr. Amani, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Sure, absolutely. Can you hear me, Reverend Sandy? Can you hear me?
Uh-huh, go ahead. Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Okay. First of all, I just want to thank you so much for inviting me on this program, for offering this program so that people can learn about love and wellness all intermingled with each other. I also want to say I'm so humbled by the invitation. Thank you so much. I used to have my own blog talk radio show, and I sort of miss it after hearing your introduction and realizing that the power in the word and just in sharing with people through this mechanism. I don't know. I may have to start up again. This is kind of it's bringing back thoughts and emotions around the show that I had. And so thank you so much. And I want to give a shout out to your dad, congratulate him being your host tonight, as well as being an example of longevity and the fact that we can live long and healthy and have our minds strong and still be powerful and still be contributing to the world. So good evening.
Exactly.
To your dad.
Yes.
And happy birthday.
So,
happy birthday.
Yeah. He stepped away for just a moment, but I think he's coming back. But thank you, Dr.
Okay.
Amani.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll get to chat and exchange some ideas before I'm off. And I also want to say that your word, evolving, the word of the day, is so powerful. I often, when I'm teaching, I hate when people ask, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because that puts a lot of pressure on young people. And if I were to answer that, I would say I want to be a lot of things. Because we're only limited by our own boundaries that we put on ourselves. So I tell them, I'm still trying to figure out what I want to be when I grow up. But in the meantime, I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and it's just sort of evolving for me. As a health scientist, I came from New York. I was running a HIV prevention street outreach program for substance abusers in New York. This was back in the mid to late 80s. And I decided, first of all, I always said when I grow up, I'm moving south. So when while I was there sitting in my office in Queens, I said, you know, I need to move to Atlanta and I need to be working at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And so not having at that time, not having all of the technology to be able to Google who I need to speak to, kind of make a plan for how I'm going to finagle my way into CDC, I just got on the phone and said, can I speak to the head of the AIDS program? And they put me through. And I was so surprised. And I told them I was coming to Atlanta to visit. And I told them about the work that I was doing in New York, which had to do with, you know, people of color and HIV, and the CDC had prior to that been focused primarily on, you know, gay, the transmission of HIV and AIDS among the gay white male population. And so they were just saying, you know, we need to look at how this is spreading in communities of color and among substance abusers and so forth. And so when I called up, they were like, wow, how fast can you get here? And I said, isn't that interesting?
Right.
And so it was the easiest job I ever got. I even commanded my own salary, and that was that was also kind of interesting, an interesting story behind that. But so anyway, that's what brought me here to Atlanta. I worked at the Centers for Disease Control in the HIV prevention program and for 11 years, and then the Chronic Disease Center. And I also, while I was at the Chronic Disease Center, I ran a major program in health disparities among communities of color. And, you know, we always worked to support communities around health and wellness. And that's really what public health is. It's not necessarily looking at the individual, but looking at trends and health issues among communities. And then dividing up those communities by, you know, race, ethnicity, geographic location, and, you know, a number of different ways of defining the groups that we were looking at. And I enjoyed the work that I did. I actually, during that time, also started teaching at Morehouse School of Medicine in the Master Public Health Program. So I had a lot of things going on, but I always felt like a lot of the work that I was doing was aimed at adults, and I felt like we were missing the younger generation, the younger folks, and that if we continued to just support programs, if I continued to just support programs in public health and health and wellness that were aimed at adults, then we would have the next generation of sick adults, you know, and sick communities if we didn't start younger. So back in, I guess, 2002, I co-founded a teen theater program with a good friend of mine. It's called Yes for Health, Youth Educational Services for Health. And our reason for doing that was to teach young folks about health and wellness and have drama as, you know, have dramatic presentation as the outcome. So we helped them to create performances. We did a big play on diabetes, which was like our signature play called Drive Through Justice. And we were basically, you know, it was basically a commentary on the fast food industry. And it was actually before that was really popular, because then lots of videos and YouTubes and books and things came out about people who started looking at how unhealthy fast food was. But we were kind of before that trend even started. Our play did that. So we were, when we did a big play on HIV and delaying and you know, safe sex, which again that the young people contributed to, and we performed not just here but in other cities. It was very, very powerful. Yes for Health was major, but it was taking a lot of my time, and so I'm getting to the haiku. Because what I wanted to do was, you know, it was real labor intensive when you're doing theater. And so I was still working a full-time job. And I wanted to do some additional work where I could take a workshop to schools and to locations And that's where I came up with using haiku, which is an ancient form of Japanese poetry that, you know, uses just three lines, 17 syllables to tell a big story. And so I created, just started, you know, working with young people in camps and in schools and churches to kind of share my ideas and just see kind of where that was going. Then I ended up creating my first book, which is a training manual for mentors using the Healthy Haiku method. And so I'll come up for air anytime you want to ask me a question. I can keep going.
Well, you know,
I apologize. I'll slow down.
No, you're good. So as you're going through, you know, your experiences, I'm still wanting to determine where I first met you. And it could have been very easily within that HIV/AIDS arena while you were at CDC. And then it could have been, you know, Morehouse School of Medicine. So it's just getting deeper and deeper. And so I'm really loving bringing us up to date about your background. So, no, go right ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm enjoying it.
Oh, thank you. I thought that our first encounter was at the Living Foods Institute, but you're saying it was long before that, which is wonderful.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. It might have been before if you were if you had interaction at Morehouse School of Medicine or with CDC. It might have been back long before the Living Foods Institute, actually. So I wrote the first book looking at haiku as a way of teaching about all different health issues, including violence. And I'm going to come back to the violence in terms of the work that I'm doing now at the jail. But the first book, which was, again, a book, it's a training, basically a training manual to teach people how to use the Healthy Haiku method. And so the first chapter is on creativity. And so I'll give you an example. I would go into schools or churches or wherever I went, and I would bring like djembe drums and shaker rays and tambourines, whatever, just so that they could like make noise and make music. And that way it was kind of a way to stimulate their creativity, which is great. You know, I worked with groups as young as, you know, 5, 6, 7 year olds, you know, all the way up to adults using this method. But so the first chapter is on creativity, and then there's one on delaying sex. The next is HIV and AIDS. Building self-esteem is a chapter, but that's sort of an underlying current throughout most of the book. The second chapter, the fifth chapter is on smoking, drinking, and drug use. Sixth chapter is on violence. The seventh is on mental health. And the eighth is on overweight and obesity. So this was sort of just kind of getting my feet wet, looking at all of these different issues and coming up with poetry. Most of it is original poetry that I wrote. Some of it is haiku, the 17 syllables on three lines. Some of it is other poems that I had written over the years that were related to the topics, that weren't necessarily haiku, but they fit nicely in the book.
Okay.
So if you'd so that was my first book. It's called Promoting Healthy Knowledge, Attitudes, and Behaviors Among Youth Using Haiku and Creative Expression. And I actually wrote this while I was at Morehouse School of Medicine, and I received a fellowship to evaluate the effectiveness of the program. And long story short, the fellowship was from Morehouse School of Medicine, Tuskegee, and University of Birmingham, of Alabama at Birmingham. And so I was with other students who, a lot of them, you know, it was a postdoc fellowship, a lot of them were into the physical sciences and the biological sciences, and it's a place that I really was not, you know, but I was there to learn the evaluation strategies, which was wonderful. And I actually was voted by my peers, the other students, as this being an award-winning program. So I won a, you know, just that label from them, because they were so intrigued by the work that I was doing taking this workshop and going around and evaluating with different audiences. And a funny story about that is just to show that I took the evaluation feedback very seriously, because I had primarily the students tell me what they liked, what they didn't like, what they would recommend to other children, and so forth. And so almost to the child, one of the things that I did coming from CDC, from that background, I learned how to make these wonderful PowerPoint presentations with the color, with the zooming in and out, and just, you know, just really, really nice PowerPoint. So I would go into the school, take a school, for example, and the first thing I would do, say the issue is smoking, you know, how smoking is bad for you. So I would do these wonderful PowerPoint presentations, and then I would get into playing with them, essentially, you know, talking about it, having them write poetry, have them stand up and recite their poetry to the rest of the group. So almost to the child, when I asked them, what did you not like about the Healthy Haiku workshop? And the response was, PowerPoint, hated it.
So what you thought was cool, they did, right? Well, Dr. Imani, let me just ask you a couple of questions right here, because I was impressed that you were saying that you brought in the theatrical part in as far as teaching, or as a combination to what you had written in your book and how to get the message over to the children. Is that a part of your background as well, or what made you bring that into that learning process for the children?
I think it was a combination of a number of things. I've always liked theater. I've always written poetry, and I've never been an actor myself, although I have had some training here in Atlanta by one of the best acting programs. So if this stuff doesn't work out, I have that to fall back on. But for me, it was a matter of bringing together, you know, a lot of health issues can be kind of boring. So I thought important to bring it to life, you know, to make it creative, to make it fun. And I've always liked music. I grew up playing piano and clarinet. And so I wanted to add in the music, the drama, the excitement, so that when they think about a particular health issue, it kind of comes to life. It's not just flat and dull. So I think that was really my inspiration. It's like, how can we grab the attention, especially of young people, with something that the other thing that the technique does, it makes them the experts. In other words, when you go in, you don't want to just lecture. You don't want to just share information as though they're empty vessels, they know nothing, and you're the expert and you're sharing the information. I wanted to make it so that I flip the script and they become the experts, you know. So I would like introduce a topic, but then as they talk about it, they're talking about it, we're writing notes on the board, they come up with the poetry, they come up with the lessons, basically, for each of the particular topics. I'll give you an example. For, say, nutrition, I would one of the ways I would talk about nutrition is to go up to a board, and either myself or one of the kids, I'd have them draw a line down the center of the board to almost maybe three-quarters of the way down, and then a line at the bottom. So on the top left quadrant, we talk about foods that are good for you, foods that are healthy and nutritious. On the other side, foods that are not so healthy and not so nutritious. And then down at the bottom, we would do, say, the consequences of eating too many of the foods that we put on the right side of the board. So they, from those words and It's so funny because the younger the children were, the more holistic that list of good foods was on the left side. They would have fruits and veggies. That was it. They would have blueberries, bananas, strawberries. I mean, broccoli, they would list their favorite fruits and vegetables. And this is without me prompting. I said, what's good for you to eat? They would list those things. And on the right side, what's not so good? Hamburger, cheeseburgers and pizza and fried chicken. They were real clear, and then down on the consequences, they would say, well, diabetes, high blood pressure, cancer. And there would always be one child that would say, well, you could die. And I'm like, thank you. That completes the list. So again, they become the experts, and then they take all those words on the board and write haiku poetry. So they string the words together. And exactly. So they're the experts. I'm just there kind of observing them writing what they know anyway to be the truth. So with the older children and even a lot of the adults, we'd be on the good side. We're still on the left side. Can we add fried chicken to that side? No. Can we add pizza? And so I would always make it a teachable moment. I'd say, okay, you want to add pizza to the healthy food. What do we have to do to pizza to make it healthy? There are healthy versions of pizza. You take a healthier crust, a whole wheat crust instead of a white crust. You put vegetables on it and broccoli and mushrooms or whatever, and leave off the meat, so I would always, try to see what we could do to make it a teachable moment. But it was so clear that as we get older, we forget, or we just, it's self-selection or whatever, of what we think is healthy for us, because we know as children.
Right.
If you're giving a dinner party and you have a big spread, and just, for example, say you have the fruits and veggies on one side, or even the fruits on the right side of the table, and as you get down, you've got the rice, the mac and cheese, and then you got the meat way down on the left. The children, the little children that come in the room, they go right to the fruit. That's it. They know. That's what they want.
When my granddaughter was like, she was real young, and she told her parents, she said, I don't eat meat, because they were trying to give her like maybe a sausage biscuit egg from McDonald's, or something like that. And she says, well, I don't eat that. And so they thought that I had taught her that. I'm like, I didn't tell her anything. So it's interesting to hear you say that. As they're younger, they have a connection still to what's healthy. And it seems like we then train them to eat bad as they get older and older. That's interesting. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. The commercialism, all the commercials. I was just telling some of the guys that I work with at the jail that when my son, he was still in a car seat. And I raised him pretty much as a vegetarian. I think he may have still been eating some chicken at that time. But for the most part, it was mostly vegetarian. And anyway, he couldn't have been more than three. He was in a car seat, and we're going down the road, and he started singing, everybody needs a little KFC. And I'm like, where did you get that from? What is it? What does that mean? He said, I don't know. Did not know.
It was just catchy,
because
right?
He had heard
right.
it playing on commercials. He had, he was just sitting there singing the KFC jingle, and I'm like, wow. When you talk about programming, it's just so strong in our society that the kids start out so innocent and wanting the fruits and veggies and the things that keep them healthy, and they go into the supermarket. And all the candy is at children's level, right down there. So that's what they see.
Exactly.
That's what they want. Yeah, that's what they want. So this work has been very eye-opening and very, again, I think it has helped me to I guess, develop the creative parts of myself in addition to encouraging others to step into their creative best. And there's definitely a connection between our creativity and our health. You know, there are those who sit around every evening and watch TV, which doesn't take much creative thought at all to do that.
Right.
As opposed to sitting down on the piano next to the TV and playing the piano, or writing your own book, or writing your own story. And, keeping that, there are actually scientific studies that say that keeping our mind sharp has a lot to do with longevity and not getting sick, not getting Alzheimer's. I mean, really keeping the brain sharp in addition to everything else. And maybe I'm going off on a tangent, but I think that creativity is so important, you know, and just being able to keep thinking and analyzing all these things that are going on in life and all of our choices in terms of diet and exercise and all of the things that we know keep us healthy.
Yeah, no, I agree with you totally on that. I notice a difference and the elders. I have always loved to be around my elders ever since I was just real little, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had to learn my cousins as my uncles and my aunts started dying off, because I would rather be with them, you know, than with my cousins. But, you know, too many of our elders are hooked, are you know, given these medications that are making, you know, them just lifeless. And
right.
So they
right.
And individuals that I've known that, you know, I used to go to the gym with, or they had a garden in their yard and,
mm-hmm.
you know, were always active. And now, you know, like they're like, oh, Sandy, I got such and such, and, you know, I'm on this medication. And they literally are almost like in a comatose state, you know. And that's
yes.
what they're doing now. They just sit and they look at television. And so, you know, that dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever it is you want to call it, whatever that stuff is, you know, it's their end. But it's because they're not using their mind.
They're not using their minds. Exactly. A friend of mine, she was just telling me her mother-in-law just turned, I want to say 95, and I have gotten together with them and Mrs. Bird, and what a wonderful person. And when we're together, we're playing games, mind games, card games, and just having so much fun, and she's so lively, and it just keeps you thinking and alert. So We want to keep our creative juices flowing, you know, as we age, and it's good to reinforce that from when people are very young. I was on Facebook just yesterday, and I saw a friend of mine who was so proud that her son was now on, I think, a TV series. I didn't, you know, get all the information, but he was in our teen theater program back when we started, back in 2002. He was one. My son was also in the teen theater program. He's also he's an actor also. does a number of things. But it's nice seeing kind of, you know, and I can't take credit for any of them. There's a young gentleman who was in our group, and we could tell he was gifted from when he was probably 11, and most of the other kids were 13, 14, 15. And Stephen would come in and sit at the piano and play and just sort of entertain himself. And he was fairly shy and didn't often want speaking roles in our plays. But long story short, he went to Morehouse, I think he was 13 years old. And he just got into college or graduated. He's still super young. I don't think he's 20 yet. You know, he's probably 18, but he's doing really, really well. And I know that he I heard him in an interview, and he was crediting, or it may have been a written interview, but he was crediting Yes for Health with helping him to find his voice and, you know, to be able to speak up, which is another thing that we teach in the Healthy Haiku workshops, helping young people to find their voice, find how they are unique, and to be able to express themselves, which is so, so very important.
Right.
So I wanted to share some of the poetry with you from
that would be excellent.
Yes, okay. Yeah, so one of the, as I mentioned, violence, and I'm going to get into, you know, some of the work that I'm doing at the DeKalb Jail and talk a little bit about how that whole thing came about. But in one of the pieces that I wrote, the haiku is very simple. It's like you really have to focus or you might miss it. But, it tells a story with just a few words. So here is one that has to do with violence and something that when you share this particular poem with the children, it sparks a whole discussion about, you know, about what we do when there's conflict, when we get angry, when we disagree with somebody. So here it is. When he pulled back his fist, he stared at the lifeless face of his best friend. And so the theme under that is use your brain and not your fists. And so, you know, and it paints a picture. You know, you see this guy standing there. You know, they had a disagreement. He hit him in the temple, and he killed his best friend. Didn't mean to, but with all that energy,
right,
all that energy brewing up, he just didn't realize how powerful that hit was. So, and it was interesting because maybe about 2 or 3 weeks after I wrote that one, I saw it on the evening news about a child who had hit, like, his best friend and killed him. I was like, wow, you know,
wow.
It's like real life
yeah.
imitating poetry. It's so true. So that was one that I often share. And there's a number of really good ones around HIV and delaying sex. Let me see if I can pull those up quickly.
You say that you have the children actually acting out that poetry that you've written? So, like, for that one right there?
I've done it a number of ways. Usually I share my poetry with them just to get them started. In other words, this is kind of what it can sound like. This is what it can look like. But I really want them to write their own. So here's one about AIDS. AIDS. Now, that's something you get when you think you've got it all together. And it says, even people who think they know it all have been stopped in their tracks because of HIV. You know, so the whole focus is on prevention and knowing your status, knowing your potential partner's status. They say one of the fastest growing populations with HIV and AIDS are the elders because they're not taking the precaution.
Right.
Yeah, you know, the 50 and over crowd, you know, we've got a lot of women who are menopausal, you know, so they're not worried about getting pregnant and they're not worrying about other things that they should be. You know, pregnancy is not the only result from, you know, having unprotected sex. So, again, my poetry is here to just sort of stimulate the discussion and to show them what it looks like. But I really want to encourage them to write their own, you know, to write their own stories, whether it be whatever the topic is. I did a whole work with a group. I had a contract with a Hispanic after school program. And the whole workshop was on smoking. They wanted to really reinforce the hazards of smoking with this particular group. And these children wrote some powerful, powerful poems. And some of them had to do with you know, being, you know, the picture of being in a car, you know, with the uncle driving, the windows are all up and the uncle is smoking, you know, and not being able to breathe and choking and hating the smell of smoke and wishing they could get their uncle to stop smoking. They did some really, really, really great, great work. So let me see if I have any of those handy. It's always amazing to me. And then I've had children who didn't feel like they could write the poetry, so they drew pictures. And
okay.
Really powerful pictures that, for them, that was their way of expressing their haiku, was just in a picture, because it was easier for them, because that just made more sense, and it was easier for them to draw than to find the words that they wanted to share. And so one of the things I did was I took this training manual and said, you know, I'd really like to use that and take some of the topics in there that I didn't go into as much detail in and create a whole book. So that the second book was just a poetry book that pulled out poems from the training manual, and I also added poetry from some of the youth groups that I had worked with as far away as
okay.
St. Croix and the Virgin Islands. So the second one is a poetry
okay.
book. But the third one is all about how to fight childhood obesity using this healthy haiku strategy and sharing the poetry, but also sharing the science. Again, most of my books are written for teachers and mentors and parents that can work through these issues with young people. So this most recent one I did 2 years ago is called Healthy Haiku 3, How to Fight Childhood Obesity, One Poem at a Time. And there's a great little piece in here by poet laureate, one of my favorite poets, Sonia Sanchez, who talks about haiku and how she's used it. Because, you know, a lot of people, I could tell when I tell them about my workshop, Healthy Haiku, they think, oh, Japanese, well, what does that have to do with us? It has everything to do with us. It's one world,
right,
it's one globe.
Right.
It's we're all connected. However, she says very eloquently, I knew when I heard young poets say in verse and conversation, I'm going to put you on pause. I heard their haiku nature, their haikuography. They were saying, I got to make you slow down and check out what's happening in your life, in the world. So this haiku slows us down, makes us stay alive and breathe with that one breath that it takes to recite a haiku. This haiku, this tough form disguised in beauty and insight, is like the blues, for they both offer no solution, only a pronouncement, a formal declaration, an acceptance of pain, humor, beauty, and non-beauty, death and rebirth, surprise and life, always life. Both always help us to maintain memory and dignity. And so I love her term, haikuography, but I do say that although she says it's not, there's no, you're not trying to really teach anything or make a point, or formal declaration. I use haiku to teach and to share
right,
those topics
right.
and those deep topics that we often that often go unspoken. And so this tool gives parents and mentors another way to approach some really tough topics before there's a crisis. So often we just deal with things when there's a crisis, a teen pregnancy, or
exactly.
somebody, you know, commits a violent crime, a young person. I've got lots of 17 and 18-year-olds with me at the DeKalb jail. And, you know, my heart goes out to them the most because, you know, I certainly haven't walked their path. But one of the things I've learned is that so many of them don't see the options that they have. In fact, our program is called Options for Living and Learning, and we try to share with
right.
them options for figuring things out so that they don't, like, for example, there was one young man, he's either 17 or 18, and I don't remember the story with his parents, but he was basically home alone with his younger siblings, acting as parent and needing to feed them, so he was stealing food to provide to the children. And now, of course, he didn't know what his other options were. He didn't know about the food pantries and the local churches that could have given them food, or, you know, other places they could have helped him and his siblings out. So we're just, you know, trying to teach about options before there's a crisis, before they make a bad decision or, you know, a wrong choice, let's say.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. So I have been doing Healthy Haiku workshops now since 2006. And I actually worked with the Center for Black Women's Wellness back in probably like 2011. And I really enjoyed working with the women there, because I realized that working with the children is wonderful, but especially with topics like nutrition, the parents, especially the mothers, are the ones who are doing the shopping. So if it's not
reinforced and really
taught by the parents, then it's not going to happen. You know, the children will quickly say, "Well, I'm not the one that buys the 7-Up or, you know, the sodas, the pop, the sweet cookies, and all of that. My mom buys that."
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but sometimes it's got to come through the children. Consider, because like you're saying, you know, as we get older, we're more and more conditioned into unhealthy eating patterns. And so sometimes children have to kind of stir us up a little bit. Dr. Monty, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, talk about your prison program. And I also want to talk about some of the other work that you're doing as well. Okay? So we'll be right back.
Sounds
good.
Thank
you. Remember, you can ask Dr. Amani any questions about her work. Our call-in number is 516-531-9819, and you would just press 1 to let us know you want to speak live on with us. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Done, baby. Do it naturally.
And y'all know that was Miss Shaka Khan singing I'm Every Woman. That's who Dr. Amani reminds me of. She works with the youth. She works with the adults. She works with all the populations with providing holistic information and a healthier way to look at this thing we call life. So welcome back to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. You're welcome to be a part of the discussion. You can reach us at 516-531-9819. Press 1 to let us know you want to speak live on air with us. So Dr. Amani has been talking to us about an ancient form of poetry called haiku, and it's three lines with 17 syllables, and she's been using it with youth and various populations of people, with women, with their health issues. She's been working with the youth with Yes for Health, where she did a teen acting group back in 2002 and made quite an impression with the youth and teaching them how to eat holistically, very nutritiously. And so that's where we are right now with Dr. Amani Ma'at. And but she's got so much more that she does. She's worked with CDC, with the HIV and AIDS population here in Atlanta and also in New York. And so, Dr. Amani, you want to tell us about that prison program that you were telling us, Options for Living and Learning? What do you do with that program?
I'd be happy to share. Can you hear me? We're good?
Yes, ma'am.
Uh-huh. Yes, okay. I saw the DeKalb newspaper one day, and it was highlighting this program called Options for Living and Learning at the jail, where they were teaching different classes about, there's one called Think for a Change and Planning Ahead, and those were some of the early, and actually yoga. They've been teaching yoga for some years there. And so I saw that little article, and I was so inspired, and I said, you know, I should volunteer to teach a healthy haiku workshop. At the time, they were just teaching women's classes. This was back in the end of 2015. And so I went and was talking to the women who were running the program, and by the time we got to the end of the conversation, they said, well, you know, we have 8-week sessions, like semesters, and then we have 2 weeks off. And we are finishing a semester. We're going to be off for 2 weeks. So how about if you come and teach women's classes 2 days a week? And I said, I was coming to volunteer to do one class. Do you all have a budget? and they did. And so I never got to volunteer. I was a consultant with them for about maybe a year and a half. And then the woman who was managing the program announced that she was leaving. And I was like, oh, no, she's leaving. What's going to happen to the program? So I went and spoke to the chief, who works closely with the sheriff, and I asked her what the plans were for the program, for Options for Living and Learning, because I loved the program. I thought I saw a lot of growth. I went from teaching just women's classes to teaching men's classes. And the men are so much less drama than the women, but part of my heart is like really wanting to teach the women, but they were just, the whole energy was real different teaching the men. So I do both and work mostly with the men. But anyway, long story short, the chief said, when I asked her, I said, well, what are you going to do with the program? She said, why? Are you interested? And the rest is history. I've been managing the program since September. It's kind of like how I got into CDC. It's
creating your own career opportunities. I'm just absolutely loving that.
Well, I think that's the way to go. You know, rather than, I don't know, just looking for any old thing. It's for me, it's always been right where I'm supposed to be at the time. So I'm loving the program. The goal was to expand what was formerly a court-ordered substance abuse program, where they had people who were coming right from the courts to the substance abuse program, and they liked that program so much that they expanded it so that everyone in the jail would have an opportunity to have some type of class. And so now we have someone who's teaching the law of attraction. You probably know Professor Jamila Franklin. We have somebody, April teaches sound meditation with the singing bowls, Tibetan bowls, and so beautiful. Of course, we have, you know, English writing, reading, writing, arithmetic kind of classes. We have the yoga still. We have Think for a Change. I teach health and wellness. Somebody teaches employment skills and job readiness. So there's a wide range. We have a young lady who just joined us who's teaching Spanish. And she's not only teaching Spanish to the guys who want to learn Spanish, but she has helped some of the guys who don't speak English well to learn English. So she's been a real treasure, a real nice addition to what we're offering through the Options for Living and Learning classes. So I've been really enjoying that. I'm actually working on my fourth haiku book, which is a collection of poetry and stories, lessons, as well as drawings, pictures by some of the inmates that I've worked with over the past 2 years. The title has changed a number of times, but it's basically the first part of it is Poems from the Jail. And I think it's going to be my bestseller because I'm so passionate. It really brings together a number of my areas of interest. One, working with young people, because a lot of the folks there are very young. You know, we have some outliers. I've had some 50 and 60 year olds, but they're the exception. You know, a lot of the folks that I've worked with are 17, 18, 19. And this particular method, the Healthy Haiku work, has helped them to just see so many things, to kind of, I call it, expanding their lens of how they see the world and how they see themselves in it.
Right.
And so some of the topics that I cover are, in addition to nutrition, I always get that in, but forgiveness, judgment. There's something called the Ho'oponopono, which is an ancient Hawaiian tool for resolving conflict within oneself as well as within the community and within families. And it's four statements. I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you, the Ho'oponopono. And I tell my students, a lot of times I'll mention that on one occasion I had the opportunity to, I've traveled to Hawaii a number of times. And one time I was there, I went to one of the museums that had a big mural. It was like the whole length of a long hall. And it had pictures of the very first Hawaiians up to current day Hawaiians. And so my eyes were fixed on the gentleman in the left corner who was the first Hawaiian, who was a jet black African. And I was like, there's some history that we're just not taught in school. So, again, the question of, well, what does this have to do with us, this Ho'oponopono thing or healthy haiku? The Ho'oponopono, I have guys and women all over the DeKalb jail saying the Ho'oponopono. The point is to say it almost to yourself like a mantra, you know, in your head. You don't have to say it out loud. I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you. And that takes the place of the negative tapes that we have playing, you know, the guilt, the sorrow, the anger, the, you know, I shoulda, coulda, woulda. Instead of having those old tapes that aren't helping us, you're replacing it with the love, with the, you know, I love you, I'm sorry, you know, please forgive me, and thank you. And then when you share those words with other people, it's just really amazing. I've had students come back and say, oh, you know, I shared the Ho'oponopono. There's one woman in particular, and she was one of the outliers. I think she was probably in her 50s. But she said, yeah, I was talking to my daughter on the phone, and she was trying to start a fight with me. So I just stopped and said, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you. And the daughter said, did you just say you love me? So she said it again. Yes, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you. And what do you think the daughter said?
Hopefully the same thing back, right?
She said, I love you more. And that was the end of the dispute.
Wow.
And I've had so many people come back and say, because of all those four things, love is the most important. It's the highest vibration. I talk a lot about vibration and you know, our energy and so forth. And so when people hear I love you, it just makes them melt. You know, so it's like,
right,
it's
right.
The most important thing.
But then
it's so much more important.
Yeah, but when you have those other three components on that too, though, I'm just absolutely loving that. You know, I love you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Please forgive me.
Please forgive me and thank you. There was a psychologist who, Dr. Hugh Len, who was, he did work in the prisons in Hawaii. He was working in the criminally insane ward in Hawaii in the penitentiary. And long story short, he did this work, and he was basically, he calls it cleaning and clearing. And it's like everything is energy, and we're all connected by energy. So he was basically reading the cards of the inmates, you know, John Smith, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you. And just kind of doing this whole spiritual cleansing thing between himself and each of the inmates.
Oh.
He even met the inmates. He wasn't coaching them or counseling them or doing anything, and the energy started changing in that particular wing. So anyway, the Ho'oponopono is very, very powerful. It's something that I use. I hear people, I've actually introduced it in some classes. Oh, yeah, yeah, I've heard about that. Yeah, no, that's good. It's like, what are those four things again?
Okay.
So that's been an important part of my work.
You can do that in your family, too. Like the thing, I say you can do that in your family. If there's something going on in your family, you could just stand and hold the peace like that and just go down the line of all the people in your family. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, definitely Google the Ho'oponopono. It's spelled just like it sounds, a bunch of H-O's, P's, and N's. H-O'Oponopono, Ho'oponopono. And you'll see the work of Dr. Hugh Len in Hawaii. There's a book called Zero Limits by Joe Vitale and Hugh Len that talks about this cleaning and clearing that we do with the Ho'oponopono. The point of it is to get to zero limits, where you're totally unlimited in what you can do in life and in the world once you clean out the gook, you know, the stuff that's not serving us. So I enjoy teaching that and using that information. We also do vision boards, which the guys love doing that because they're taking out pictures from magazines and creating what they want their life to look like. I don't know. You've probably done a vision board, Sandy. One or two, right? Yeah.
Right.
So I take basically the best of things that I've learned from different parts of my training, you know, some through school, some through like the Living Foods Institute. I do a whole thing on alkalizing and the right water as well as the right food. And I tell them, I know you don't have a lot of options here, but you have families, you have children. You want them to be making the right decisions in terms of their food. And I said, and when you get out of here, the farmer's market is right down the street. So go there and get you some live and raw organic food that will nourish your body. And so that's, they're always very grateful to the information that I bring. I have read, we have these little evaluation cards that it's kind of a Likert scale from strongly agree to strongly disagree or strongly Yeah, strongly, it starts as strongly disagree, and on number five is strongly agree. And just a couple of questions. You really like the class. You would recommend the class. You learned something that you can apply, you know, in your life. So just a couple of questions, but every class is straight five, straight down, you know. Every now and then you'll get a four,
excellent.
But that's somebody who's a hard marker. But and then what they write about the class, and not just mine, but the other classes and what they're getting out of this whole program has just really been touching. Just knowing that, you know, we may have just changed the trajectory of somebody's life and somebody's life choices. We talk about them writing their books and give them tools and tell them about create space on Amazon and just things they can do right out the gate to write their story. and then to go and talk to high school students and other audiences that will they can learn from their experiences.
That's powerful. That is powerful.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
it
that,
really is.
That,
you,
yeah. So mm-hmm. you don't how what type of a difference does that make in the lives of those individuals? Are their return rates lessened? Are they in making a impact on the community? Do you stay in contact with them after they are released? Do you have any way of knowing?
Yeah, other than the little evaluation cards we're doing now, we're actually looking at putting together, and I've talked to the sheriff about this, putting together like a longitudinal evaluation study so that we can document the impact that the program is having on them afterwards. I know just anecdotally, I have run into, because, you know, it's DeKalb County. I live in DeKalb County. I live about 10 minutes away from the jail. So I have started seeing people that, you know, I had formerly had first met as inmates. And the reception from them is always so kind and so grateful and thankful. You know, I've had, there was one woman, I was at a health fair, and she saw me, our eyes met, she came up to me and hugged me and hugged. I didn't know who it was at first. You know, and she's like, remember Monique from the jail? I was like, oh, yeah, of course. but then they always tell me, you know, it's like, okay, my children have graduated from school and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And just, you can tell that they're in a positive place now, much, much better place, I'm sure, than before they went into the facility. So, yeah, I'm excited about doing some real evaluation work, as well as we're, you know, teaming up with some folks who want to make sure there's enough transitional housing available for them, as well as other services in the community, because without those services, it does become a revolving door. You know, it's like, I can't get a job. There's nothing for me out here. So, you know, I go still do what I do and get back in there to a place where I know people and I can feel comfortable. And we don't want that to be where they feel the most comfortable. We want to provide
exactly.
for them in the community. Yeah.
Right.
So
that's
something we're working on.
Just really being, your program being so different from what I know have been going on, you know, in the jail systems, because it's normally they'll have, you know, inspirational speakers come, I think, once a week or something like that, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, but nothing
mm-hmm.
consistent as far as a part of a curriculum like you have. So I think that's very powerful.
It's really powerful
for
and
them
unique.
To take.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a number of accreditation reviews, you know, different aspects of the jail life and programs and so forth. And there was a review that was held a couple weeks back, and there was a woman who was just, I took her to one of the classes, and she was just, I mean, she pulled up a chair, and one of the people in charge, he said, okay, she's really liking this. How do we get her out of here so we can move on? I mean, he said, I'm used to seeing programs of this quality at the prison level, but not in a jail because of the turnover and so forth. But we make it work, and it's, you know, it's been very, very rewarding for them and all of the instructors. I think they just enjoy practicing what they do and what they love doing. So anytime you want to come, Sandy, you have an open invitation to come visit and do a class as a guest.
Yes, ma'am.
You know,
I'm going to pick you up on that, too. That's cool.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Is like 90% of the population would be your younger ages that you were talking about, like that 17 to 20? Or is it
maybe
less than that?
I would say go a little bit higher, 17 to like 25, 26. I would say that's about a good 70%. of who's there. Started around 17, 25, 26, and then, you know, and then it starts being, you know, not as, as consistent in the age. I know I had one class, and there were about five young guys who, most of our class sizes are between two people and 12 people, and I had a full house one time, and a lot of these young guys, I mean, they were like, say, 20 to 23, you know, and a number of them had, and maybe it was just a coincidence for this group because it's not always like that, but a lot of them had, like, four and five kids, children. And I'm like, okay, all right. So, right. We need to talk about this because there is a way to prevent pregnancy, you know, just have to, there's always opportunities to share and teach. And the nice thing about the program is that we do it without judgment at all. I mean, they feel so comfortable with us. We feel comfortable with them. And so they like that because we treat them humanely and, you know, just as people from the community. You know, you see people in there that look like relatives, that look like just people. Right. And then you learn about it. I always start new classes with new people and ask them, who are they? You know, what is your passion? What is your skill? And I always do a little meditation that takes them kind of back to the promise they made coming into this lifetime. It's like, let's get back in touch with that. You know, who are you? What are your unique skills and talents and abilities? Because we're all born divinely and, you know, on purpose. And so they love that. They love the meditation and the deep breathing we do to start each class. It just kind of puts them in a place of comfort and relaxation. And so, yeah, you definitely have to come, Sandy, and visit with us and check it out. It's such a powerful program. And I've, like I said, the book, I'm hoping to get the book out probably by the end of the summer. You know, I was just looking at my manuscript. I'm already at like 133 pages. And I said, you know, I could just keep going or I could get this information out. Right now I'm interviewing some of the officers who have been supporting the program, sitting in the classes and participating in the classes, some of them. And so that's like the last voice that I'm adding to it because I think it's an important voice for that because they talk about the changes they've seen, you know, with the inmates.
Right.
So I'm doing that, but I really want to wrap this up and get it out and see myself speaking to – you know, jail systems around the country just so that they can learn from the work that we're doing and emulate what we started here in DeKalb County. And so, I'm really excited to be a part of it.
Because it sounds as if, you know, like you're recognizing and honoring these young people or these incarcerated individuals. Like, and it may be their first time ever that somebody has recognized them, you know, as a unique individual. Mm-hmm. And that's so key to getting anyone to change a negative behavior or habit. You know, like, you got to see that person. You got to acknowledge them. Right. I love
that. Oh, may I read something? It's just a real short first paragraph in the introduction of the new book.
Yeah.
And this is the way it starts.
Yeah.
It says, Namaste, the divine in me greets the divine in you. This is shared with the inmates at the beginning and end of my classes. This sacred Sanskrit word from the oldest recorded language embodies my connection with each person I meet, including the inmates. We are all reflections of each other. As such, we are here to share, learn, and experience life in a way that makes the interaction memorable and at the core level. Recently, I was taking a visitor up on the floors, and I saw a small group of inmates with a guard sitting and waiting for medical appointments. A young man looked up at me and called out, "Hey, Auntie." I smiled hello and acknowledged his greeting, while the guard reprimanded him for speaking to civilians. It's all good. I knew that I had touched this 17-year-old in my classes in a way that made a difference. For me, that is what this work is all about. And so that's how the book starts.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's amazing. So maybe when I finish it, I can come back and and share more.
And you need to let us know how we can contact you and follow you and see what you're doing and when you post your book and, you know, we'll be right there.
Mm-hmm.
So tell
okay,
us how
well,
we can do that. And
okay, a couple ways. One is my I have an online bio, and it's drimani.info, drimani.info, and that's where you'll see my bio, which has a link to the book and a number of things. You can also, the Healthy Haiku 3 book about childhood, fighting childhood obesity is on Amazon. So you just go to Amazon and type in Healthy Haiku and the number 3. Haiku is H-A-I-K-U, Healthy Haiku 3, and it's on Amazon. And on Facebook, I'm imani.maat. On Facebook, it's imani.maat. And so on Facebook, I have a Monday fasting group, which is a lot of fun because we share recipes. We call it feasting and fasting because some folks said, well, you're not really fasting if you're making smoothies and drinking exotic drinks. So I said, okay, so we're feasting and some people are fasting just with water. I never do that. I'm going to learn to do that. But that's a fun group to join on Facebook, the Monday Feasting and Fasting group. So that's another place to connect. And those are probably some of the best ways. On email, I'm imanimaat@gmail.com, which is another way to reach me. I do some individual health and wellness coaching, you know, with people are beginning to call me and ask me about that, and that's fun. I enjoy working with people one-on-one. So I try not to spread myself out too thin, but I do like, especially working with people that I'm very close with. But I've taken on people, clients who I didn't know, but who, you know, were referred to me. So please feel free to just reach out to me, and I'm happy to help in any way that I can, whether it's through the books or through workshops. I'm going to be speaking, setting up workshops for schools, and again, the other jail incarceration systems around the country. So please feel free. I know you're in California right now.
I am.
Amazing
right.
to me. Amazing to me. Well, enjoy the time
know,
with
right?
your dad.
Technology.
Mm-hmm. I know. So, amazing. It is truly amazing. Yeah.
So the way you've written your books, you have written them so that people can actually purchase your workbooks, and they can, if they need assistance, they can get it, but they can actually teach exactly what you're teaching from the books that you've written. Is that correct?
I'm going to put together another whole I'm in the process of putting together another whole training piece because there's a lot that I've added since the first training manual.
The training manual
has all of the different topics I mentioned, which is good. They can still get it and start working it, especially if they've heard this interview. They'll have a sense of how to take it and use it, but it is best to get the books and connect with me to get information on what's the best way to use it. But they are standalone books, and the Healthy Haiku 3 is on Amazon. The other two are not. I have boxes of those, so I have to relist them on Amazon. So those, if people are interested in the training manual or the poetry book, they can get in touch with me, and I can get them copies of those. In the meantime, okay. So yeah,
so
you
that
have
is
a wonderful
Imani
time.
My app.
Mm-hmm.
I just was going to recapture your contact information again. So you're on Facebook under Imani Maat, and
Imani
also
dot
the
it is a dot.
Okay, Imani
dot last name. Yes. Maat. M-A-A-T.
And then you're feasting and fasting, your Monday feasting and fasting. Is that how it's listed?
Yeah, that's on
your
Facebook,
group,
right. So
your Monday
just,
group.
They can just request to, you know, once they became friends with me on Imani.maat, they could ask to join the Monday feasting fasting group. which is fun. I think there's a lot of good information on there. And
it really is.
What else?
I love your group, and everybody seems to be so energized by it and actively involved in it. It's a great group.
Yeah. I have a newsletter, too. It's called tinyletter.com/Dr. Imani, D-R-I-M-A-N-I. And that has a lot of good information. I did one on sugar not too long ago. And so many of us have to have the sugar thing, you know. So
I talk
about the hazards of too much sugar consumption. So the newsletter is another way to follow my work and to connect with me. tinyletter.com/DRIMANI. And they can just register. You know, it's free. It's a free newsletter with lots of information in it. So,
you have so much to share, and I'm so thankful that you've taken the time to be with us just to whet our appetite on some of the things that you were involved in. Because I know we barely touched the tip of the iceberg for you. So all that
it's
you
been
do,
fun, though.
You know.
It's been fun, and I appreciate it. You know, I'm connected to a larger community of healers and health and wellness people. I was with Dr. Mark today, Dr. Mark Armstrong, who is amazing. I'm going to be taking some classes with him just to be able to expand what I can do to share, you know, with the community.
Yeah.
So, and I'm so grateful for our connection, Sandy. Yeah. Thank you so much. For the time, for the
pleasure.
Encouragement, for the kudos. Appreciate it all.
And she, Dr. Imani also hosts she did the winter health bazaar at her home, and there was so much information shared and so many people that came out that had another perspective, you know, to add to that holistic healing. It was absolutely amazing. And I so enjoyed that, you know.
Yeah, and thank you for your help with that, Sandy.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Because we all have something to add to the pot, you know, so that it's seasoned just right for all of us. So, you're doing a wonderful work, and I really appreciate it.
Well,
thank you so much,
Sandy.
And we didn't get to the water part, but we'll do that on your next interview with us.
Okay, that would be fine, and people can write to me and ask me about that, or, you know, I usually have some information online about the alkaline water, so I'm happy to share that, too. And just grateful to you and all that you're doing, and thank you for this wonderful platform, and keep on doing what you're doing to make a change in the world in terms of health and wellness and love. Thank you so much.
Yes. Oh, thank you. And Dr. Imani is going to be one of our speakers on the Life, Love, and Wellness Global webinar as well. So until next week, we're out. I love you so much. And you guys take care of yourselves. And we'll see you next week on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show.
Bye. Oh,